We are talking about prayer and particularly intercessory prayer. But tonight we want to look at what it is that restrains prayer. When God intends to send a revival of power to the church, we have seen through the centuries, he sets his people to praying. I know that you pray if you're saved, like I know that you breathe if you're alive, but are you taking the time to get alone with God and give yourself to earnest prayer? Elihu accused Job of a great sin. Job 15:4. Yea, thou castest off fear and restrainest prayer before God. He's talking about sinful life activity. He was falsely accusing Job, but he got the idea correct. Not about Job, but about the principle. We remember from 1 Samuel 12:23, Samuel proclaiming, "Moreover, as for me, God forbid that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you. But I will teach you the good and right way." Do you catch the idea of sinning against the Lord by not praying? Joshua 7:12. Therefore the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turned their backs before their enemies, that means run away, because they were accursed. Neither will I be with you anymore, except you destroy the accursed from among you. You recognize this being the time of the story of Achan in Joshua 7. It illustrates the victory over sin. Looking at this victory over the sin of neglecting dedicated intercessory prayer. Let's take the time to read a couple of passages here. Joshua 7:5-7. And the men of Ai smote of them about 36 men, for they chased them from before the gate, even unto Sebarim, and smote them in the going down. Wherefore the hearts of the people melted and became as water. This is the first time they'd lost anybody in battle. And Joshua rent his clothes and fell to the earth upon his face before the ark of the Lord until the eventide. What did he do? He fell down, worshiping, praying, grieving. He and the elders of Israel and put dust upon their heads. And Joshua said, "Alas, O Lord God, O Lord Jehovah, wherefore hast thou at all brought this people over Jordan to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us? Would to God we had been content and dwelt on the other side Jordan. Why do you even bring us here if you're going to just have us die?" Who was he blaming? He really put this in God's lap, didn't he? Look at verses 10-13. And the Lord said unto Joshua, "Get thee up. Wherefore liest thou thus upon thy face? Israel hath sinned, and they've also transgressed my covenant which I commanded them, for they have even taken of the accursed thing, and have also stolen and dissembled also, and they have put it even among their own stuff." Dissembled means faked it out, you know, did that which didn't seem what they were doing. Therefore the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turned their backs before their enemies because they were accursed. Neither will I be with you anymore, except you destroy the accursed from among you. Up, sanctify the people. Stop praying until you make things right. Sanctify the people. Say, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow. For thus saith the Lord God of Israel, there is an accursed thing in the midst of thee, O Israel. God said this. It's not that I suspect this. God saw it. God knows it. Thou canst not stand before thine enemies until ye take away the accursed thing from among you. So it is with us. It's not good enough to live life on our own terms and then ask God to bless. Let me just share with you several thoughts. Number one, the presence of God is your only power against the enemy. For us, the enemy is not the Amorites, but Satan's power, the tempters. And so by the presence of God, of course, I'm not talking about his omnipresence. That's never ceasing. I'm talking about your face-to-face fellowship with him. I remember my mother saying, wait till your dad gets home, you know. And when I got to see my dad, then my mom talked to him, and then he would look at me. And that was horrible. The second thing is this. The loss of God's presence always causes defeat and failure. It doesn't matter what you claim or how you used to walk or how people think you walk. If we apply this truth to our failure in work for God, we are led to see that it all goes back to our not standing in clear and full fellowship with God. Things messed up, things going wrong, things falling apart. Let's get right with God. Number three, hidden sin always causes the loss of God's presence. He's too holy. He's too holy to accept that. The church complains about having so little power in the world. It is because of the lack of personal and secret prayer. That hidden sin, not doing what is right. Number four, God himself will discover the hidden sin. When you go back to the story, predating what we were reading, Joshua 6:19, but all the silver, God says to them, all the silver and gold and vessels of brass and iron are consecrated unto the Lord, and they shall come into the treasury of the Lord. It wasn't that they had to be destroyed. It wasn't that they just had to be left and piled up under a pile of dirt. They too were to enrich the sanctuary. God says, I claim any good that can come out of the city. This is Jericho he's talking about. So God gave the victory, but Achan stole some of the stuff for himself, buried it under his tent. So that was the command, and now God reveals to Joshua chapter 7, verse 11, Israel has sinned. They have also transgressed my covenant which I commanded them. That's what we just read, you see. For they have even taken of the accursed thing. Accursed, the word means dedicated, devoted. It means it should have been devoted to God. It was accursed because it shouldn't have been taken for themselves. And have also stolen and dissembled also, and have put it even among their own stuff. Put it with their stuff. So, God knows this. God himself discovers it. Sometimes he reveals this to you by a failure in your life, in your ministry. Let God show you how neglect of prayer indicates unfaithfulness to true discipleship. Are you actually following Christ? Are you being Christian if you're not praying? Christ would work long hours into the night and get up long before daylight to go off by himself to pray. Sometimes praying all through the night. He did that before he started choosing the individual disciples. Number five, once God reveals sin, it must be confessed and forsaken. None of this going into the booth and quietly confessing it to a priest, and then it's all washed away. You can go back and do it again. Someone has guessed that the mafia and Roman Catholicism worked very well together. You could have your life dedicated to criminal activity. All you had to do is go to the priest, confess it. He couldn't tell anybody. You can go about your business. Listen to Proverbs 28:13. Wisdom says, "He that covereth his sins shall not prosper. But whoso confesseth and forsaketh them shall have mercy." Don't reinvent who God is. Don't think that you say the words and you plan to do it again and everything's okay. You think about the word forsaking. The man who forsakes his family, the man who forsakes integrity to his country. That's what you're supposed to do with sin. The sin that God has opened up to you, the sin that you are confessing, you're turning your back on it. You never intend to serve it again. Forsake it. God says, "I'll give you mercy." Mercy and grace. Mercy not holding it against you. Grace, do you have the strength to go on? Come before God and confess your prayerlessness. Then destroy it and put away the sin. How would we do that? We will rearrange our schedule and do whatever needs to be done to set up a time of prayer. We will give ourselves up to God to live a life of prayer and faith. You say, "Well, I have other things to do." Change it. Put first things first. Will you give God what is due him? Will you love him enough to surrender, to let his will and grace have their way with you? And finally, number six, with sin cast out, God's presence is restored. There's a beautiful thought. David, confronted by the prophet Nathan, he points the finger and says, "Thou art the man." And David immediately says, "I have sinned." Psalm 51, he goes back to God and says, "Restore unto me the joy of thy salvation." What a joyless life he had been living in this period of time. Less than 9 months, but a long time. Murder of his good friend, taking the wife. After Ai, there was no more reference to defeat in Joshua. God never speaks to his people about sin except with the purpose of saving them from it. God doesn't keep bringing it up. "Oh, now you pray to me. I remember back when you did this." God doesn't do that. The same light that shows sin will show the way out of it. the same power that condemns us will make it possible to conquer the sin. So six thoughts concerning the sin that Elihu accused Job of. You restrain prayer before God. Are you restraining prayer? Holding it back. Holding back the power of mountain-moving prayer.